Hi there. I'm Amy Robinson, an editor at Apparition Lit magazine. Today I will be reading you The Bear Wife by Lee Bobbitt. Novelist, editor, and critic Lee Bobbitt's novels have won the Sunburst, Copper Cylinder, and Aurora Awards, been selected for the Ontario Library Association's Best Bets program, and shortlisted for the Sibyls and the Andre Norton Award. Her short fiction has appeared in multiple Year's Best anthologies and been transformed into choral work, and is taught in high school and university classrooms in Canada, Australia, and the U.S. She is guest poetry editor for Reckoning, creative writing on Environmental Justice's 2021 issue. She lives in Toronto, where she makes jam, builds civic engagement spaces, and plants both tomatoes and trees. Visit her at www.leebobbitt.com. And now, The Bear Wife by Lee Bobbitt. "She never cooks," he said, "and it's been 6 weeks since there was laundry." Alice clucked her tongue from behind the bar, and no telling if it was the idleness of Sanchez's wife or the three-day complaint in his voice. He stared at her, his elbows splayed at a dead angle, and she stared right back until he hid shamefaced in his beer. "Don't know what you want us to say," she said, and rubbed detergent off the pint glass in her hand. Big Jake, two seats down the bar, snickered. He told Sanchez about his wife before the weather turned, hoping to gloat or maybe even save him. "If that's what you like," he said, and picked up his end of the line pipe, and Sanchez just smiled. Sanchez wasn't from around here. He'd come up from Vancouver to work fracking at Horn River, and moved from the Thrift Lodge in with Betty Nosamasqua at the height of July. The couple moved in a cloud of dark hair and gap-toothed smiles until winter came on hard and early. 30 centimeters of snow in just September. It had been drifts and chain tires ever since. And slowly, week by week, Sanchez started coming into Alice's neighborhood pub alone. "Don't want you to say anything," he mumbled, 4 drinks and 40 days into a silence that poured like concrete down his throat. Everyone in town had already had their say before the weather turned. He laughed it off to all of them. Small towns had their politics, and he and Betty Nosamasqua, in her radiance, her sly, warm jokes, her berry-red fingernails gesturing every time she spoke. He couldn't have said when she faded, between the rolling heat of August and the September leaves. Before the snowstorm, she had already retreated to the house and then two rooms. Before he could trace what had come over her, if it had entered by window or door, she took to her bed and stayed there, and he was here, coping with the remains. "You know what you do with an animal wife," Jake said. "You take the pelt away. They always keep it close by. You hide that thing. She'll smarten right the fuck up." Alice stiffened mid-inspection of her clean glass. Sanchez stared at her turn back as if to read its palm lines, and then swirled the bitter foam in his pint. "Nah," he said. "We're not like that at all." The snow pressed close to his knees by the time Sanchez staggered up Betty Nosamasqua's front drive. The bungalow was sinking in a cold white desert. Ice crept across the windows and vined the siding apart, and the front walk was a treachery of footprints. Sanchez spotted the red shovel handle 3 feet into a snowdrift, nose up, abandoned and sinking fast. He stared at it a moment and gave up. Inside, the air was stuffy, the curtains rich with dust. Dishes lay in a scattered trail across the kitchen counter, stained with dried egg and ketchup. "I begged her just one sink of dishes," he thought, and pressed his hand to his forehead. Betty was lost in the dim bedroom, lost in a landscape of sheets. They rucked about her knees and thighs in warm and private snowdrifts, and beside them, curled next to them, her brown bearskin spread its arms wide. It was the same shade as the delicate places on the insides of her wrists, the places he used to kiss and then wait for her smile to widen. Sanchez was an only child. He'd never learned to tiptoe. He toppled the overflowing trash can just 3 steps into her lair, and when he righted it, Betty opened her eyes. They were as heavy open as they were closed, dark brown and dull, eaten by the whole pupil. Sanchez's heart lurched. "Oh, querida," he said. "You look so tired." Betty answered low in her throat. She was never beautiful before her morning shower. Her arms were seamed by blankets, her strong face reddened with sleep. Sanchez looked down at her, and the beer in his belly bloomed, tender and helpless and warm as the sun. He brushed a tangled black lock off her forehead, and she sighed softly, nuzzled deeper into his hand. "How are you feeling?" he managed, caught in her soft lashes on his palm. "Tired," she murmured, and her eyelids fluttered with anxiety. "I'm sorry. I'll be much better tomorrow." She held out both her arms for him, and he folded between them, folded against her drowsing skin and the bare skin between their hips. There was a moment when it was all good again. Wrists and foreheads, the thick, abandoned smell of them, his thumb circling her right shoulder blade, her fingers tracing constellation lines between the sun-dark moles on his back. And then her breath drew heavier, crunched like snow beneath footsteps. And she was sleeping, drawn down again, drawn away. Sanchez ran a hand over the dense, prickly fur. It was coarse soft, tough down to the claws. There were lock boxes in the compressor station, built big for industrial tools. He could drive it out into the bush. Fort Nelson was surrounded by wilderness, land owned by numbered companies and ignored till the permits came through. Like as not, nobody'd ever find it. He watched the pinpoint lines on her forehead smooth and thought, the dishes don't matter. He could shovel the drive tomorrow. He eased himself away from her with the greatest delicacy, wiped both hands on his jeans. Betty said and grasped at the cold where his body had been. Baby, don't worry, he said, and kissed her forehead once. Go to sleep. Sanchez went to work the next morning, sweat-soaked from shoveling, fossilized egg wedged under his nails. Big Jake caught him up at the tool locker. How's your woman? He had not called Betty by her name since she and Sanchez took up together. Fine, Sanchez said tightly through his two knit scarves. The loggers had gone home when the snow drew deep, but Northland Resources had orders to fill before winter shutdown, and nobody cared if the floor hands got cold. Did like I said, hmm? Big Jake's elbow jostled, threatening to go in for his ribs. Once, when Sanchez was young and lost, he'd mistaken bright bluff confidence for knowing anything worth a damn. That had been years and miles ago. It was far behind him as the Vancouver coast. Sanchez's tongue touched his teeth, lingered, pulled away. We're not like that, he repeated, and kept his gaze trained straight onto the tool locker. Jake Morris was not grasping the hint. He moved in closer. Sanchez felt in the cold air the radiant heat of his breath. Like what? Sanchez turned full to face him and tipped his chin up. I don't want a girl with me who doesn't want to be with me, he said neutrally and pulled on his gloves. Jake's face darkened. What are you saying about me there, Chico? What kind of guy are you saying I am? Nothing, Sanchez said and thought, you fat honky fuck. I ain't saying nothing. Big Jake Morris squinted at Sanchez through his flushed chipmunk cheeks, a distorted map of different wild land. Red fault lines spilling heat into the pits of his nostrils, flared with uncertain fear and rage. I love women, he said. I fucking love them. You ask around. Ask anyone how good I am to a woman. Any comment would further inflame him. Sanchez picked up his helmet and started down for the wellhead, leaving Big Jake to trail after him. You ask, he shouted. And then the sound drowned in the endless noise of the pump. At the end of shift, he drove the back way home, eyes on his rear view, looking for headlights. It would have been the first time someone tried it in Fort Nelson, but for Sanchez, it wouldn't be the first time. He pulled up at Betty Nosemasquak's bungalow under undyed wool sky. The snow he'd shoveled last night ripe for replacement. There were new plates scattered across the living room table, freshly scarred with peanut butter and small raisins gone hard. Saskatoon jelly dripped like bloodstains across the blue melamine. He held his hands to his eyes to hold the tectonic pressure back. At least he knew she was eating. The house hung still and dormant. He moved through it, an intrusion, and drew the blinds. She wasn't better, but they'd both known it had been a lie. November blew in like a death sentence. He felt the cold like nails digging in. So cold, turning the door handle in the mornings burned. The job was over. Even the company had scented the air, a sharp edge of wood smoke and endless ice, and cut the seasonal men loose. There was nothing to do in Fort Nelson but lie low until spring. In the heavy air of the back bedroom, Betty Nosamasqua sank deeper and deeper. The pads of her palms felt like motorcycle leather. They scraped when she reached up to touch, fluttering his cheek. "I dreamed about you," she mumbled, probably still dreaming. "Oh, yeah?" he asked gently, and ran a hand down her unwashed hair. She spoke so little now. Her big-throated sunshine laugh felt like something he'd fabricated on a secondhand lathe down at the job site, conjured up from imagination and a stray long black hair to get through the endless nights. "I dreamed that you were carrying the whole world on a waterfall plate on your head," she murmured. "And I am," he thought. "Groceries, cleaning, heating, working, waking up alone in the dark." That night, he dreamed it too. A universe balanced precariously on the spot where his brown hair was already thinning and the muscles of his neck swayed in arctic wind. There were no safety cables on him. There would be no quarter if he dropped her. He read everything there was to read about bears. Most of it was about how to scare them away. Face them directly, make noise, fight back. Make yourself look big. He was a veteran of oil and lumber camps up and down the coast. He found nothing particularly inventive about the approach. Fort Nelson had spotty brown bat in the summer, with the horseflies out. And now that everything was buried under winter white, it was worse. He downloaded wilderness videos an agonizing frame at a time and listened to the clicks and small sounds bear made at play. When they blew air, they were anxious. Either Betty snored or the winter made her frightened all the time. He sat next to her on the musty bed, his hands tracing warmer languages on her back, listening for translation. He sang her sleeping songs she'd have understood if they'd grown up the same. On the days when he couldn't take the silence anymore, he paged through a 1970s edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica in Alice's back booth, nursing scrambled eggs and an oil well headache, reading the entire series on indigenous folk tales until he admitted that he wasn't reading anymore. He could go back to Vancouver, find a winter job in a warehouse or driving at a ski hill, buckle down in a rooming house and endure the rain. But each morning, he was still living in her house. The bills were still paid. Each evening, he sat next to her in the back bedroom, her sheets a raked sand garden, and whispered, "Betty, baby, what do I even do for you?" He listened, close to her soft sounds uttered random or in a try to reply. She clung to him, woofing like a wounded thing. Fear, he thought, with his stomach icing through. Anxiety, fear. Betty's eyelids fluttered, and Sanchez sat beside her helpless and held her limp and roughening hand. The sun went. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. The man on the TV intoned through the frazzled single speaker in Alice's neighborhood pub. In the darkness, the scattered singles of Fort Nelson and laid-off site workers lifted chip glasses and dented cans. Their roar drowned out the last year, "Happy New Year!" A burst of plastic confetti flew up and then fluttered down to the floor. Someone clapped him on the shoulder, and Sanchez, alone, squeezed himself smaller and ordered another pint. "You should go home," Alice said, an hour or more past midnight. He was the only one still in Alice's neighborhood pub. The storm was howling outside, digging fingers into every crack between wood, glass, and brickwork. Anybody sane had finished their drinking at home. "Don't you think I know that?" Sanchez snapped, let out a breath, and slumped. "I'm sorry, I shouldn't give you shit." Alice pursed her lips. "Ready," Sanchez clocked, to blow air in a preliminary threat. Plastic fragments stirred in the chill breeze, prying through the pub's glass doors. He picked a bubblegum pink piece of confetti off the table and rolled it between his calloused fingers. "It's hard. This is hard. She should be here, too." He saw the spasm across Alice's face. "Shut up, Sanchez," he thought fiercely, but it was too late. He was drunk, and he was uncontrolled as a geyser. How can you say you love a girl when you can't be what she needs? When you can't even understand what she needs? Would it work? He asked her, eyes on Alice's shuttered dark ones, too demanding, too intense, too much. "If I was from around here?" Alice drew a breath, and he shut his mouth hard. They were walking perilously close to the tale everyone shrank from hearing, but which needed so badly to be told. Oh, there was so much love in him, dammed up, sprouted from its natural canyons, shoved underground, contained, and the pressure of it frightened him. It spilled and spilled and spilled. Every man in the cities or work camps he'd seen acted like it was fine, like they were smooth waters over a smooth riverbed. But in the moments any one of them looked it in the eye, they knew, if a man excavated that boundless love wrong, the explosions could wreck cities. "I just want to love her," he said, and tried, like he always had, to swallow that horrible loving back. Alice's hand eased around the neck of her broom. The women were always a little nicer in towns like this, except when they were differently unkind. "Go on with you," she said, oddly, but it wasn't the flat-angled face she reserved for Big Jake Morris. The car was cold. It took the engine 20 minutes to warm. Sanchez sat behind the wheel, insufficiently sober, and leaned his sweaty forehead against the unworn country between 10 and 2. The light inside Alice's flickered off, and then the light out front. Perhaps it would have been better if he had taken the skin and locked it away on the worksite 40 miles away, if they had done what men and women did, no matter how imperfect. He'd spent time with men on the cruise here and farther downriver, men who wanted him to dress wrong, eat wrong, sing wrong when they cranked their own music too high, as if he'd always known the words. It wasn't that they hated him, it was just so they could like him in the only ways they understood. How could he not want to be liked by them after all? What cost was his skin compared to that? He heaved a breath, sick-scented, car heat and old upholstery. He could not ask her to be any different. It was her body doing this thing. It was her own skin. Inside, the house was so warm. The smell of unruly bodies hung in the air, sweet and definite, a promise not written in languages he knew, but which pulled him, regardless, closer. He shed socks and sweaters as he made his way down the undusted hall to the bedroom where the shell of the woman he loved had laired. His outdoor clothes left a trail through the disused front rooms of the house. It was by moonlight. He saw it curled among the blankets. By moonlight and the arc of one weak lamp. A soft, breathing brown bear. Black nose a twitch. Its long lashes, just as girlish as Betty Nosamasqua's eyes. It slept with one paw stretched out, reaching for a ghostly source of warmth abandoned between the stained sheets. It was her, he thought, through the reflexive amygdalian terror, reaching for him, musty, unknowable, and still so recognizably her, still tinged with sweat and baby powder, still softest in the tiniest places between paw pad and flexed ankle. That damp nose flared when he lingered at the doorway. A huge eye opened, unfamiliar, and fixed on him with pained, frustrated love. "Bet," he said softly. The warm bulk of her huffed an anxious sigh and buried her face in the sheets. He held out his hands, not a dominant stretch, but an offering. "There is a bear in your bedroom," his animal brain shrieked, and the adrenaline was sparkling confetti in his vision. And when she saw his hands, she wailed a short, sharp howl of distress that shook the walls and shook his bones. And then his voice was joining. A furious sob that rang in chorus octaves higher, and he was across the room and whispering with hands and skin the only language they had in common. "I love you. I love your bareness. I love every hair of you. I love you happy. I love you sad. And I miss you so much. It's destroying me." Men didn't speak those kinds of words, but they weren't like that. He could not map what they were like now, or describe it to a passerby, or even languageless and ursine, the sight of her made him want to pour out pine needles for a soft bed, feed her horchata to see her eyes change at the taste, run his fingers over the joints and tendons of her world and guide her hands through his. Oh God, he wanted to never be bored of her. The bedside lamp shuddered, and then it was loose. The secret part of him, the thing that shifted continents and left wreck rocks and poisoned water behind. The pressure of his boundless love was filling the closed bedroom, spiraling 500 feet into the dark gray sky, a leviathan loosed upon the both of them, enough to blow the foundations outward. Sanchez and Betty Nosamasqua looked at each other as the laundry blew back against the baseboard, as the 1960s paisley wallpaper fluttered and caught at its loose corners. "I miss us," he said, and his eyes were stinging. She drew a deep, cyclonic breath and clicked at him softly with her long tongue. The ground buckled. He buried his hands in her brown fur and held on. Hands and skin and grief were still a language. They were still a den two people could inhabit together. And if they were together, they could stand, hip to hip, and dig outward until the air licked spring. Her paws were sure through the snowbanks. His legs, strong from bushwork, gripped steady on. The snow swirled down outside, and then inside, and then upon his cheeks, and they were moving down the darkened streets through the stormlight, holding on for dear life. When they got to the river, the ice was cracked, the water moving. It trickled sluggish. Her skin was warm. He did not know what lay across that border. He'd never traveled nightwise this way out of Fort Nelson due north. The plume was still behind him, a burst well in the sky. Betty Nosamasqua's house, the little fish atop it, balancing by the tail. And he understood, abruptly, that they would find it when it landed. By whatever combination of noses, hands, and feet, she wouldn't leave him to the cold. Sanchez sat back on his heels like a fisherman, patient, and her paws carried them outward under the dazzling white sky, past the work site, past the maps, onto the frozen river, walking together across the treacherous ice. That was The Bear Wife by Lee Bobbitt, published in the Apparition Lit April 2020 Transfiguration issue. If you'd like to read more about Lee Bobbitt, her inspiration for the story The Bear Wife, you can find it on apparitionlit.com under The Story The Bear Wife. Thank you for listening. We hope you come back to listen to more stories in the future.